Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, August 26th, 2012. This is episode 904. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix. All you need is a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into a high-definition video conference. Meet with colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPod. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TECH. And by RingCentral. I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup cost and just $20 per month per user. Try RingCentral now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy a desk phone, you get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Good to see you. Time to talk computers and the internet, cell phones and camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. And we are now officially in the technology busy season. Oh, baby. It's getting crazy in here. Maybe they have a tropical storm heading towards Tampa for the Republican National Convention, but we've got a hurricane heading towards Silicon Valley. Let's see, where do I begin? Well, of course, Friday, the jury came back in these Apple versus Samsung case. They came back after 3 days of deliberations. And already there's some question about whether they rushed this thing. There's quite a bit of question. In fact, the judge has had to change the award because the jury, among other things, awarded $2 million to Apple for something that they previously had ruled that Samsung did not do wrong. You can't find somebody if you didn't find wrongdoing. You can't just give Apple $2 million, guys. So it looks like there is a, you know, I mean, it makes sense. Nobody. We were completely taken off guard on Friday afternoon when word went out the jury has come to a verdict on a very complicated case after 3 weeks of testimony from Apple and Samsung. 109 pages of jury instructions. That's the judge telling the jury what the law in the matter is and how they have to consider what they have to consider when they're considering their decisions. And a 20-page verdict form, 33 questions on 24 different devices. And after going through the math, the judge said, oh, wait a minute. You can't give them $2 million for something they didn't do wrong. So I'm reading the Grok Law blog, which is an excellent blog about law. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't understand this stuff. Just to fill you in, Apple sued Samsung on a number of counts, claiming that Samsung had copied the iPhone and the iPad, just copied them outright, violated their patents, both technical patents and what they call trade dress patents, basically that it copied the look of the iPhone as well as the inner technology of the iPhone. And the jury, for the most part, agreed. They didn't agree over tablets. It seems like they let Samsung skate on the tablet side. But when it came to phones, for the most part, the jury said yes. Not only did Samsung violate Apple's patents, they did so willfully. They induced their American subsidiary to do so, and they fined them over $1 billion. $1,051,855,000, but they've had to lower that by $2 million because they kind of blew it. They awarded damages for the Galaxy Tab 10.1, but except that they had earlier on the form said no, it didn't infringe anything. So now there's some thinking that there might have been a little rush to judgment. In fact, one of the jurors said, oh, we decided after day one. It is. I mean, if you look at an untrained eye or even a trained eye looking at For instance, the early Samsung smartphones right after Apple came out. Actually, the jury, one of the jurors said it wasn't even that. It was the emails and the statements from Samsung CEOs that they basically admitted in the emails, yeah, we got to copy Apple. And the jury didn't like that. They were upset, and so they gave him $1 billion. Ironically, is probably not going to slow down Samsung by much. Farhad Manju, writing in Pando Daily, says copying works. They said when the iPhone came out in 2007, and actually by a year later, Apple was the most profitable phone maker in the world, making more money, mostly because of their profit margin, not because of the number of phones. They sold 4 million iPhones compared to Nokia's 113 million phones in 2008. But Apple made more money, $1.3 billion in profits on the 4 million phones compared to Nokia's 1.2. And it's been downhill for Nokia and RIM and everybody else ever since. So Manju writes, a storm was blasting through the smartphone business and survival depended on how these companies reacted. One option, do nothing. He said Nokia and RIM seemed to have decided the iPhone was just a blip, a cultish device. It would never reach mass appeal. So why bother taking it on? Whatever happened to Nokia and RIM? They're practically gone. Nokia's really struggling. RIM is pretty much down for the count. Another option, well, you could try to do Apple One better. You could spend many months, maybe even years, writes Manju, working on devices that aimed not just to match the iPhone's innovations, but to beat them. Who did that? Palm did that. Remember the Palm Pre? It's basically what Microsoft began to do. It's one of the reasons Microsoft is about 3 years behind. They went back to the drawing board. They cross-licensed patents. They did everything right. They made an agreement with Apple. They said, we won't copy you if you don't copy us. We'll license your patents if you license ours. And they went into the lab and developed something completely different. Apple has no problem with Microsoft. Microsoft's got a little problem because they're way late to the table. Farhad Manju, writing in Pando Daily, said there was a third choice. You could just copy Apple. You could borrow the iPhone's key ideas, make a half-hearted attempt to dress them up in your own brand, bake them all into your product line. And that's what the jury decided Samsung had done. And, it's pretty obvious. I think everybody agrees. Yeah, Samsung almost admitted it as much. But guess what? It kind of works. Samsung will pay $1 billion. It has $21 billion in cash. They'll modify some things. They have to. Maybe Apple will license some things to them. But they'll go on as the most successful smartphone company in the world. So, Samsung has calculated about $25 billion in profits on their handsets, while Apple made $70 billion since the release of the iPhone. Even if the judge triples damages, which she could do, that's only $3 billion out of the $25 billion in profit. Not a catastrophe. Kind of, I would guess, what Samsung might have said is the cost of doing business. And it's happened before. And as Manju points out, Samsung's decision to copy Apple has been good for us as consumers. It's given us some choice. I love my Samsung Galaxy S3. I really do. It is, in my opinion, every bit as good, maybe even better than the Apple iPhone. Manju finishes up saying, to its credit, Samsung is moving away from straight mimicry. Its latest devices don't look like ripoffs, and the company seems genuinely interested in building legitimately innovative things. In fact, that's what the other courts have ruled around the world. Samsung's decision to ape Apple wasn't the most graceful strategy in tech history, but faced with an emergency, a, quote, crisis of design, as Samsung executives put it, copying was the best Samsung could do, and it paid off handsomely. Maybe this is something Samsung expected all along. This is the cost of doing business. We got to copy him. Interesting point of view. Farhad Manju writing in the Pando Daily. And I think accurate. I think there's no question that Samsung did copy Apple. But we all benefited from that copying. And it looks like even Samsung, despite the fine, might be doing all right. It's an interesting take. What do you think? 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. If you would like to talk about this decision, I know there's Samsung and Android aficionados who are going crazy. Somebody wrote me and said, why didn't Apple sue Google? Well, there are a couple of reasons. I would say the number one reason is if you're looking for damages, you, of course, need to prove commercial damages, that you it cost you something. And Samsung is selling phones. Google's not. Google makes Android, the operating system, but gives it away. So a lot harder to get damages from Google on something they give away. A lot easier to get it from Samsung on something they sell. But it could very well be Apple goes after Google next. Google's going after them. Motorola has sued Apple last week. So the beat goes on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to dedicate that to Apple Computer. To give. The world is yours. The world is yours. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I tried to break free. You tried to keep 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number we are talking about, of course. I mentioned that this is the storm. I didn't even say what's going to happen. That was just the old stuff, the Samsung-Apple decision. That's nothing. And of course, Samsung's going to appeal. This is going to go on forever. And the problem is, a real fundamental problem is, the way the patent law works, you get a patent for 17 or 20 years. And the problem is that with software patents, with technology, 17 or 20 years is a lifetime. I don't even know if we'll be using smartphones in 17 years or what. So the whole issue becomes, maybe they should have 4-year or 3-year software patents. I understand and I agree that, if you invent something, you deserve to reap the benefits. The whole point of the patent system is that you get exclusive license for it for a period of time in return for telling everybody how you did it so that once that license expires, they can do it. And it's good for everyone. See, that's a good thing for everyone. But 17 years in the cell phone business is, longer than a lifetime. And then, get ready, because this is going to be a crazy week. On the 29th, in 3 days, Samsung comes out with its Galaxy Note 2. This is the biggest phone out there right now. I use a Galaxy Note. Love my Galaxy Note. 5.3-inch screen. It's going to be 5.5 inches. And I don't know what else is new. Apparently very thin. In fact, it won't even be bigger, because the bezel will be smaller. So even though the screen's bigger, the phone will be the same size or smaller. Yeah, Samsung's innovating. Believe me, they're innovating. No, there's no 5.5-inch Apple phone. So the 29th, that's coming out from Samsung. Then September, is it 5th? There is a Nokia announcement, which we believe will be the next Windows 8 phone, maybe a Lumia 1000 or something. Nokia is alive still, doing some interesting things with Windows phones. They'll also be, and maybe it's possible they'll announce, I suspect they will, a Windows 8 tablet, a Windows RT tablet, because Microsoft's going after Apple with those. And then the next day, there is a Motorola Google announcement, because Google owns Motorola. And I think it's September 6th, the Amazon announcement. That's a big one, because that, we believe, will be the next Kindle Fire, new tablets from Amazon. And then, although it's only a rumor, but I believe it's a true rumor, Apple will announce its new phone on September 12th. And the latest, it's really, I think Apple at this point is leaking stuff to people. Because an Apple blogger named John Gruber, who somehow seems to have the inside track, just wrote a think piece. He said, I've been thinking about this, and I think that Apple probably will do two separate. I'm just imagining that Apple will do two separate announcements. They'll do an iPhone announcement, and then some weeks later, they'll do a mini iPad. I'm imagining this will happen. The next day, the Wall Street Journal, or actually, I think it's John Pachowski in All Things D, which is owned by the Wall Street Journal, says, this just in, Apple doing two announcements. There seems to be a little bit of leakage at Apple. They're kind of managing the cycle at this point. Two new announcements, we think. We don't know. Nobody knows for sure. So it's going to be crazy. Next few weeks, crazy, crazy in the technology business. And you bet we'll be talking about it, covering it, finding out what you think. To the phones we go. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Now, the website is techguylabs.com, or for short, leo.am. That might be easier to remember. On there, we put show notes, everything I say, links to all the articles I talk about, and a chance for you to comment. So if you have a better idea or you have an opinion, you can also do it on the website, techguylabs.com. And there's a link there to our chat room. Always fun. Lots of people in there. And the phone number is also on there if you can't remember it. But it's 8888 Ask Leo. That's what Sam called from San Diego. Hey, Sam.
Yo, good morning there, Leo.
Good morning, Sam.
Yes, sir. Look at, I got something simple here, I suppose. I'm trying to hunt down a good ringtone, a free download.
Yeah, you know, okay, what kind of phone do you have?
I just have a regular LG AT&T.
Yo, it's a smartphone or it's a what they call a feature phone? Because they don't want to say...
Feature phone.
Yeah, it's a feature phone. They don't want to say dumb phone. That would be insulting. What is the opposite of a smartphone? A feature phone, sure.
Yeah.
So here's the deal with ringtones. First of all, it's a multi-billion dollar business that shouldn't exist at all because in many cases, you already own the song that's the ringtone, right?
Yes, sir.
And if you could only do it, you could edit the song and put it in. Now, some phones will let you do that. Android, for instance, as you have all your songs in your playlist, you can actually say, I want that one to be a ringtone.
Okay.
But that's on smartphones, on feature phones. In fact, it's funny because Apple used to do that. They used to have a little ringtone editor in iTunes. They took it out. And the reason is it's a big, big business, and the record companies love selling you ringtones.
Yes.
Because you already bought the song. Now you're going to buy it again. And usually a ringtone, you don't buy outright like you buy music. You buy it for a few months.
Yes, right.
I get you, man. It's a huge business for the record industry.
Now, what about that mixer?
Well, so here's the deal on a feature phone. The only trick is getting it into the phone. And there are programs. I used to use a program called BitPim, BitPim. They're all clunky and funky. But these programs would let you take you'd have to edit the music first, and then all the program would do is give you access to the file system on the phone so you could copy it over. And even feature phones actually have operating systems and file systems and all that stuff. So if you knew where to copy it, usually it's a ringtone or a music folder, you could just do that, and it would show up in your ringtone list. But it's always clunky, and it's specific to each phone, and you know it's not ideal. The problem is that free ringtones are often spyware or worse. So I'm not crazy about using, quote, free ringtones. I'd be very nervous. Certainly, don't put a free ringtone program on. So that makes me nervous. So you kind of, I would say pay for them. If you want fancy ringtones, pay the $1.90 or whatever it is. Your cell phone company offers them. Even, you know, Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, they all offer them. And the safest thing to do is spend a buck and buy them. Because, A, it's a lot of trouble, more than a buck's worth of trouble to figure out how to get them onto your phone. And, B, there's this real issue of, you know, kind of junky stuff that you may not want on your phone. And if you're lucky enough to be using an Android phone, DoubleTwist and a number of other programs will just take whatever's on your phone and turn it into a ringtone, which I love. On the iPhone, you can still do it, but you have to do it kind of manually. You have to kind of rename it. You can Google it and you can find it. I'll put a link in the show notes to an article that describes how to do it. Essentially, you're going to take the audio, the M4A audio that you have. Is that what it is? And rename it to a ringtone extension. You might want to edit it as well. And then it will just kind of put itself in the ringtone folder and automatically sync to your phone using iTunes. So you could still do it. They haven't stopped you from doing it. But what they did is they took out the easy way to do it. And I bet you anything, that's because AT&T said, hey, we're making billions of dollars here. Get out of my way. Don't block the ringtone, baby. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't know which one is that. Donkey Kong, Super Mario, something? I'm sure the chat room will know. Was it Zelda? No. Dr. Mario. Wow. I didn't even know there was a Dr. Mario. What, did he get a degree? Is it a PhD or an MD? Mario, I'm here to chop your leg off. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Jason, Massachusetts. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I made it up to New Hampshire now. How are you, Leo?
We held you on hold so long, he's crossed a state line. Well, at least you're not in Canada yet. What can I do for you?
Actually, I'm just coming back from the Boxborough Mass Ham Fest.
Oh, you're a ham. That's awesome.
Yes, sir. In fact, I picked up a nice HF antenna there.
Fantastic.
And I worked 9 Alpha 3 Oscar Sierra just a little while ago. He's in Croatia.
Wow. In your car, in mobile, you work Croatia?
Yes, sir.
That's pretty cool.
A little bit after that, so it's
on HF. So you have a high frequency. Normally in mobile, you work in FM. So you're working in, or rather, is it VHF? You're working in different frequencies this time.
Yeah, up in the shortwave band. I was using 21 megahertz and also 28 megahertz for another contact.
That's neat. That is fun. Pay attention to the road, though.
It makes it go a little easier when you're not on the air anyway.
thank you, Jason. What can I do for you?
I have failed in a search for an MP3 player that I can have in my truck, but I would like to mount it in, also have Wi-Fi, so that way when I get home, it's there on the network and I can move files on and off it. Of any such device?
You know, Microsoft keeps talking about this idea of syncing, you know, the device in the car when you park in the garage via Wi-Fi. I don't know. Let me see if the chat room knows. Alpine has been making some pretty sophisticated head units. These are the things that you stick in your car to replace the existing radio. I wonder if Alpine makes one with Wi-Fi. Wouldn't that be cool? There's no reason why not. It's a matter of cost. I don't know. I do not know. Text in our chat room says D-Link used to make a kit like this. I think what we want though is a head end. Alpine does support Wi-Fi. It looks like in some of its head ends, its head units. They use Bluetooth and WLAN or Wi-Fi to transfer songs over. So I would go. I've always been impressed by what Alpine is doing with its stuff. They've always been very sophisticated.
Yeah, the only trouble with their stuff is you need amplifiers for everything.
Right.
It's just a head unit, and that's it.
So. Right. Right.
That's the only drawback for them.
Don't know. I wish I did. But Jason, keep listening because we got a lot of people in the chat room who are all sorts of stuff. Here's one. Here's a Big Ginge gave me a link from ecrater.co.uk. Well, I don't know if you want to put this in. Holy cow. That's more than a head unit. It looks like it's the entire dashboard of a car. HDMI, Wi-Fi, plus 3G, plus GPS. I'm not sure if I am going to go for this because they spelled Android Andorid 2.3. That makes me a little suspicious. It's a 7-inch doubled-in HD touchscreen GPS car. Oh, it's got DVD, Bluetooth, DVB-T, and Wi-Fi. Holy camoly. Now, it's about 300 pounds UK, so what's that, about $500 or $600? But, no, that's not bad. Let's see. Here's another link from the chat room from Pokasomi, who says Crutchfield has something. I like Crutchfield stuff. This is another Alpine. This is the CDE-HD-137BT. We'll put some links in the show notes. iTunes tagging, steering wheel controls, Pandora in your dash. I like that. Yeah, there's a lot of choices. But now this one has a... does it have an amp built in? Can't tell. Yeah, it does. It has a built-in MOSFET amp. If you're a ham, you should figure. You can figure this stuff out. It's kind of a good idea. I like it. Keep listening. I'm sure we'll have more suggestions from the chat room as time goes by. Maryland, Glendale, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hey, how are you, Maryland?
Fine, but I'm disabled, and I've got a problem with Yahoo.
Okay.
I got a new computer, and about 5 days before mine broke, I quit using it because the keyboard, there was something wrong with my Vista machine. So my mother bought me a supposedly new Windows 7 HP that's another issue, but the issue I'm calling about today, since they closed out the account, my email addresses were specially encoded. They look like normal email addresses, but I could do everything one-handed. Now, I've written email to email to email and haven't heard back from Yahoo, and I don't know what to do.
Yeah. So it's Yahoo changed your email?
They closed out my account because, and understand I've had the account for over 14 years.
Wow.
And they wouldn't turn over the information on the account because I've forgotten one of the secret questions.
So they don't know it's you.
They don't know it's me, and I'm getting really frustrated because I can't email the normal way.
Right.
Looks normal, but it's not.
I understand. You could use one hand to type it.
I use one finger to type it.
One finger, yeah. Boy, that is frustrating. You know, it's unfortunate, but companies like Yahoo, because their mail is free, they don't really spend a lot of energy. Google's the same. Microsoft's the same. And support, because it's too expensive for them. They're not making much money on you. So... I don't know what to do. I don't know where you go to get Yahoo to, you might try escalating it. Maybe you could write an email to Marissa Meyer, the new CEO at Yahoo, explain the story to her. This is in general a really good technique. And we've talked about this before, almost all these big tech companies, and I shouldn't give this out because it's only successful because nobody knows about it. If everybody starts doing it, it's not going to work. But this is a good one. Marilyn, you need to know this. If you can't use, obviously you can't use your Yahoo account, but you can get online, so use a different account or get your mom to do it. And send a note to the CEO of Yahoo, Marissa Meyer. Get it up the food chain, in other words. Almost all the CEOs of tech companies have an office of the chairman or office of the CEO where they handle complaints, and they can be escalated up to this. I just don't know of any other way. I don't have any special magic powers there, unfortunately. Lee in Denmark is telling me that he had a problem with Apple. He emailed Tim Cook last weekend and was called by an Apple representative Monday morning. that's, I think, the best way to do it. I think that's the best way to do it, Marilyn. I wish I had some in at Yahoo I could help you with, but I just don't, unfortunately. Maybe they're listening. Maybe they're paying attention. Good luck, Marilyn. That's got to be frustrating, especially after 14 years with the same email address. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Our show today brought to you by our friends at GoToMeeting. They do such a good job with their HD Faces technology. We're working on making this. I want to use the HD Faces. It's so good. I want to use it for our Skype callers instead of Skype, right? So they're working on something. To do that, I would love to do that. If you visit GoToMeeting.com, you can see a little video on what they do here. So you're probably familiar with GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting's been around for some time as a screen-sharing meeting software. Makes it very easy to set up meetings. You just click a link. Your email sends, you know, if you have Outlook, it's really easy. They have an Outlook plugin that just sends out email invitations. Your clients, if you're doing a sales presentation, or your colleagues, if you're doing team meetings, just click the link. Software downloads fresh each time. It's very quick, and that's nice because it's always up to date. It's always secure. And they're seeing your screen. You're sharing the PowerPoint and everything. And now they've added this HD Faces. This is so cool. It's crystal clear HD video. Most computers nowadays have a camera right on top. There was a Logitech right up there. If you have an iPad, oh, this is sweet. It uses the camera on the iPad when you join the meeting. And they can see you. You can hear them. You don't need a phone. You're in the meeting, and you can see their screen, Mac or PC. You got to try this. If you're doing online meetings, GoToMeeting.com. Here's the deal. Go to the website, GoToMeeting.com. You'll see that orange try it free button. 30 days free. But you got to click this promo code link for me and type in tech. Not tech guy, just tech. We made it shorter. T-E-C-H. And you could be using GoToMeeting in about 5 minutes. That's how quick it is. GoToMeeting now with HD Faces from Citrix. Safe, secure, fast, very effective. Use the offer code, promo code TECH, and you'll get it free for 30 days. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's my phone number. Toll free anywhere in the U.S., but we get callers from all around the world all the time. You can call that number via Skype out, and it'll cost you nothing, no matter where you are in the world, except maybe some lost sleep if you're on the other side. If you're in Adelaide, it'll cost you a little lost sleep. Kathy in Santa Cruz, California. Hi, Kathy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
I'm so excited to talk to you.
Oh, it's nice to talk to you.
I've listened to you on KGO, and now I'm watching you on Twit TV for the last, since you moved to your new studio.
Thank you. You know, I went to high school in Santa Cruz. I went to Santa
Cruz.
You did?
High.
Yeah.
Huh.
Love Santa Cruz. We moved there in 1971.
That's about the time I moved here, too, I think.
Yeah, it was a fun hippie place to live. I'll tell you that.
It's still a beautiful place. I love it.
It is right on the coast there.
Yep, and the fog is finally lifting, so we're going to have some sun today.
Yay!
I have a couple questions. I have an older Dell. It's got XP on it, and I have the IE7. My first question, my thing I'm having problem with, last weekend I had trouble with my DSL, and I have AT&T DSL,
mm-hmm.
and the girl had me, I was having trouble getting one of the websites that I had on my favorites. It was knocking me off, so she had me go into the control panel and Internet Options Advanced and do a reset, and it, of course, knocked everything, all my passwords.
Yeah, kills all the passwords, the cookies, all
yeah.
the history, yeah.
And also what it did is I have Norton Internet Security 2012. I lost the toolbar on it, and it's checked, you know, like it's going to be there, but I don't know if it's hidden or what. She noticed it, and we couldn't get it back. And then in the meantime, I've noticed that when I go out on Google, it used to have, besides some of the websites that have a little okay or whatever, Norton approves this website.
Yeah, that's just all bogus worthlessness. I don't think you want it. First of all, your big problem is you're running a 6-year-old browser, which is very insecure.
That's my second question.
Yeah, you should get rid of IE7, update it. I'm sure Microsoft's been bugging you to update it, haven't they?
They have, and that's my second question.
Yeah, please update it. That browser's way too old. Browsers are the number one vector for virus infection. And so having a secure browser, you run Windows Update, I'm sure, regularly, right?
Yes, okay. Every day.
Okay.
I run the update.
That's far more important than this Fakatka Norton Goombar. You don't need that.
Okay.
Trust me, you don't. This is kind of, you know, far more important is having a secure browser and running Windows Update than having the Norton toolbar on it.
Well, that's another reason you're hard to get through to, as you know, but a couple of years ago I tried to update it to the IE8, and it did something, and I called Dell, and they took it off, and the girl told me that XP wasn't compatible with IE8, so I just haven't done anything.
Oh, yeah. No, it, you can't go to 9 or 10.
No, I know that.
But you can go to 8, and that would be, I know that Microsoft would be very happy if you went to 8. The other thing you could do is maybe go to Google's Chrome browser.
Okay.
One of the things I like about Chrome is that thing that you like about the Norton toolbar, which is useful, is it's looking at a website and seeing if it's a dangerous website. Chrome does that automatically.
Can you run both?
Sure.
Okay, and would you recommend, where would I go to download this IE8? What would be a safe place to do that from?
Well, only for Microsoft, and you would do it as part of your Windows update. So, as I said, I'm sure Microsoft's been saying, hey, why haven't you updated? Because they don't want you using an older browser.
Well, a lot of the websites now, too, say they're not going to be supporting it any longer. So.
Yeah, but I would just stop using IE. Next time you do Windows update, there'll be some recommended updates in addition to the critical updates. The critical updates are critical, obviously, but some of the recommended updates are useful. One of them will be Internet Explorer 8, so go ahead and do that.
So do I just go to, like, Microsoft.com, or where do I go?
Just run your Windows update. Do you know how to do that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Norton updates.
Forget Norton. You want to? I hope you're doing Microsoft's Windows updates.
Well, they automatically, yeah, they do prompt me for that, but they did. They haven't asked me specifically if I want to change to IE8.
Right.
But they do their updates. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can just go to Windows. It's in the Start menu. Go to Windows Update in the Start menu.
Okay.
Or even, you know, you can even in your browser in Internet Explorer, you can type windowsupdate.com and it'll take you to Microsoft's Windows Update site.
Okay. And I wasn't sure where to do that.
Yeah, and among other updates, there'll be an IE8 update in there.
Does anybody in your chat room have any ideas on how to get this toolbar back?
Yeah, I have an idea. Uninstall Norton because it's terrible. I'm not kidding. It's really awful.
Okay.
It's just the toolbar is not making you safer.
Okay.
You really don't need it. I'm not sure why it's disappeared. I'm not sure why it has disappeared.
I know. I didn't know if that had anything to do with the enhanced search engine. I
think it's probably because of the reset.
Okay.
I don't know what the enhanced search engine is. Well, that makes me nervous too.
It means that it tells you whether or not it's a safe site or not. I didn't know that's what it was called.
Yeah, so Google Chrome will do that automatically without, you know, what Norton's really doing is collecting information about where you're surfing. It's not something you need. It doesn't make you more secure.
Okay. Thank you, Leo.
You're welcome. I would get Chrome from Google. It's faster. It's better. It'll work fine on Windows XP. It is much more secure because one of the things Google does, and they do a better job of this than anybody, by the way, is they check websites for malware. That's what the Norton site is doing. They check sites for malware. Google, if you think about it, they're indexing every site in the world all the time, right? So they're much more actively looking at sites, and they're looking for malware infections, and it will warn you. Boy, will it warn you if you go to a site that's dangerous. And it's a really, I do feel that's a good feature, and I feel Google does a better job than Norton does in that. And I don't like toolbars on my browsers. I really don't like. The other thing about Google Chrome is it comes with Flash, and it keeps itself and Flash up to date automatically without bugging you. And Flash, since Flash is such a buggy, insecure product, I think that's very important too. Most people should probably switch to Google Chrome. You can get it free, google.com/Chrome. google.com/Chrome. Steve in Sun City, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I'm perplexed. As I told your screener, you're my last and best hope.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
A friend of mine built a computer for me. Pretty savvy. But since the time we put the computer together, we've been having a problem. And that is whenever you play audio, like Pandora, or even if you're playing a game in the audio, there'll be a glitch. The screen will get, you know, like a momentary little squiggle, and then through the sound you get this blurping noise. Now we've changed out every component in that computer except for the processor.
It's not the processor. A scroogle and a blurp. Let me hang on. We're going to take a break for the news at the top of the hour. When we come back, I shall make some suggestions for the scroogle and the blurp. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. This is the show where we talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, home theater, digital photography, anything with a chip in it. And lately, court cases because of all the lawsuits over patents. 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And you can go there and find all the stuff I talk about. In fact, you can comment and vote and talk. You know, what I think happens a lot is people are listening and they say, hey, I got another idea. What about? Here would be another solution for that. For instance, this one's going to definitely be one of those. And if you've got an idea for Steve in Sun City, you can go to techguylabs.com and the show notes. This is episode 904 and say, What about this, Steve? Have you tried this? What about that? We're also looking for an earlier caller, a ham who wanted a good Wi-Fi enabled car stereo system. We've got a few things. A caller who's Marilyn, who had problems with her Yahoo account. She can't get back into it because she forgot the security question. We go to techguylabs.com. Help us out. So, Steve, I've been watching the chat room during the break. Steve has a brand new computer. And for some reason, when he's listening to audio, and is it all audio or is it just streaming internet audio?
It's all audio.
All audio. So even if you're listening to a music CD, periodically he'll get a glitch where the audio goes bark, but also the video. What does the video do?
The screen kind of gets like it just kind of flickers.
So it's my guess that this is the only reason and it doesn't happen when you're not playing audio?
Correct.
That's very strange.
I changed the motherboard out. We had a sound card. We disabled took the sound card out and used the motherboard.
Where are you getting the audio from? Is it from a sound card, or are you doing HDMI video out or something like that?
It's coming actually, I guess it's coming from the motherboard.
It's an analog audio jack, a mini phono jack coming out of the back of the computer?
Yes. I even changed out the speakers.
And the power supply, have you swapped that out?
Unfortunately, that was the last thing that we did.
And it didn't work.
No, I went to.
Wow, you have done everything.
Yeah, the only thing we haven't changed out. Now what about, is it possible that the BIOS could be doing this? I think we're on the, what is it, IDHA or IA, whatever, and somebody said something about going to the IDE.
I'm baffled. I mean, this is, by the way, just a little object lesson for those building their own computers. If it's a Dell, you don't have to think about it. You just send it to Dell. If you build it yourself, you...
I done that.
Yeah, you are the guy responsible. And when something doesn't work, you can't go to the... You can only do what you've done, which is swap out. Unfortunately, you've now swapped out every single part.
Every part. So it's... Kind of, we're thinking it's got to be some kind of setting, but we can't find out what the heck it is.
Everybody's yelling, and this is all that's left, software, a driver issue, but you presumably checked and made sure you have the latest drivers and all of this stuff, right?
Yeah, we've downloaded the...
Get the drivers from the motherboard manufacturer, right?
Well, we actually talked to the motherboard people, and because the first one was I won't say what brand it was, but... We thought, well, it's got to be the motherboard, so
right.
We swapped that out. And we've been talking to the new people, and they're the ones that are suggesting all this other stuff, including the power supply.
Yeah, I mean, the power supply could do it, because I think that's an underestimated source of common problems in computers is power supply. You know what you might want to try? I mean, it's cheap to get a separate sound card.
Well, I had a separate sound card, but it was doing it with that sound card, too.
It was. Okay, yeah. The next thing to try is maybe a pair of USB headsets, because that basically takes the sound card out of the computer entirely and puts it in that little dongle in the USB connector. And if your friend or somebody has a USB headset, I use them for Skype all the time.
Okay.
That's external. Basically, it's taking digital data from the USB port and converting it to analog with a little, a little circuit board in the headset. And if you're getting the glitch there as well, then it's in the data, and it's a separate driver. The nice thing about a USB sound device is it's using a standard. It's just getting data, so the driver is in the device. So I don't. That would at least tell you if there's a hardware issue, because if that still happens on a USB device, there's something wrong with the hardware.
But which piece?
But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. This is.
Swapped it all out.
Are you using a good line conditioner? Maybe it's coming in through the power. Or it could be radio frequency interference. It'd have to be pretty strong to affect the video as well as the audio, but it could be.
No, I'm not.
Boy, the chat room has about 8,000 suggestions. And all of them are just kind of, crazy, wild guesses. Because it's impossible to know what it is.
I mean, we cleaned off the hard drive and started over, and I got
wow, you've done everything.
I got a 2 terabyte hard drive, so I know it's there's plenty of room.
Yeah, you've done everything. Because, you know, that would be the, so if you put new operating system on there, obviously you updated all the drivers and everything.
Yeah, we've updated.
How often does it happen? Is it every 20 seconds, every minute, every 5 minutes?
You know what? There's no rhyme or reason to it.
It just happens once in a while.
You know, one time, like we thought we had it licked, when we put the power supply in, we went like, I had Pandora playing, and I think we went through like 9 songs, and I thought, yay, we got it fixed, and then it did it.
Oh, that's so frustrating.
Sometimes, you know, you turn a computer on, and you turn Pandora on, and you're into it for a minute and a half, and it does it.
What does it sound like? Like a bzzz?
Yeah.
And the screen, what does it do when you get the bzzz? Is the same
screen kind of, if you can kind of picture a line right down the middle, you know, it kind of squares that line a little bit. Just a little squiggle flash kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. It sounds like there is a little interference hit, either RF or coming through the power supply.
Okay.
So I would get a good, maybe go to Trip Light or APC and get a good, what you want is something that will really clean up, make that turn. You know, if you look at power on an oscilloscope, it's supposed to be a sine wave, a very clean curve sine wave.
Right.
But it isn't. It's all over the place. And what you're trying to do is clean it up to be a sine wave. Hits on the power or RF hits could absolutely make that difference.
Okay, so what is it exactly that I should get?
There are surge suppressors and there are uninterruptible power supplies, but you want one that does line conditioning.
Line conditioning.
Yeah. Though they don't have to be expensive, but it wouldn't hurt to have some condition. That's all I could think of. Are you near a big radio transmitter or anything like that?
Could it? Can you recommend a brand or?
Yeah, Trip Light is one, and APC is another.
Trip Light.
Yep, TRIPPLITE.
Okay.
Or APC. American Power and Conditioning.
Okay.
Now somebody keeps saying, I hate to say this to you, that it could be an I/O error in the CPU. And you haven't changed the main chip out, have you?
No, that was the
that's the one thing.
That's the final component, and then I will spend about $2,500.
Oh my goodness! And now you know, don't build your own. It's right. So hard to figure this out, and the reason people build their own is because they like these kinds of things. They like the challenges, right?
Well, it's real interesting because the gal that built the computer for me threw up her hands and walked away.
Oh yeah, I don't blame her. Trip Lights on Amazon, a good conditioner, about $134. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I love this song. Once again, musical director Kyle Benham digging deep into the archives for that one. He puts his playlist up on his Google Plus page, Kyle Benham, after every show. But then we also put it on our Tech Guy Labs site as well. Well, the chat room's been going crazy, talking about our last call and the problem he's having building his computer and the sound hits and so forth. And, you know, one thing I didn't mention, and I think it's a number of people in the chat room have suggested, and I think it's a very good idea in general to have, is a Linux boot disk. Let me explain what that is. If you go to a good place to go, Ubuntu.com, Ubuntu.com, you can download an image that you can burn onto a CD or DVD that you can use to boot up your computer. And it's not Windows. It's a completely different operating system called Linux. And it'll run off of that DVD or CD. And a lot of times, if there is a software or a driver issue with Windows, Ubuntu, because it's modern and up-to-date and well-supported, often has all the drivers for all the hardware. So you boot up into Ubuntu, and if the problem goes away, then it really is a strong indicator that it's a software issue, that it's either an operating system or a driver or a program issue. And it's just a nice thing to have. It also means if a hard drive dies or you have problems with a hard drive, you can boot up the Linux from the CD. It's a full operating system and has tools on it for fixing things and a browser. And it'll in other words, give you access to your computer. So I think a good idea, just to have it lying around for future reference, it might be a good thing to do on weekend while you're listening to the show, is go to Ubuntu, U-B-U-N-T-U, and download a disk image. Burn it to a CD or a DVD. Most modern computers can boot from a CD or a DVD. And then now you've just got this kind of extra troubleshooting step that you can try. Well, does it work with Linux? And if it does, then you know there's something about the Windows install that's messed up. Camden in New Hampshire, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Camden.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I just recently found your show, and I am enjoying it thoroughly. I appreciate everything you do.
Thank you.
A few shows ago, you had mentioned Music Monkey. And
Media Monkey, yeah. Yeah.
Media Monkey. Mm-hmm. The problem I have is I have about 5,000 MP3 files, and some of them are the same artist, but they're not named the same way. Like AC/DC on some songs might have a slash in it, and others
right.
won't.
I hate that. AC/DC is the worst. The worst. Depending on where you got it, it could be all lowercase AC/DC, AC/DC, all uppercase ACD. Yeah, I know what you mean. That's the same thing on my collection.
Yeah. You know, or first and last name stuff.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I was hoping Media Monkey could sort that out, but
it's hard if you think about it. Any program that's going to do something like that is going to be very judicious about making changes because it doesn't want to screw your library up. So, Media Monkey, and there are others that do this. By the way, everybody in the chat room says it's officially AC Lightning Bolt DC. There's the problem. We don't have a lightning bolt character. So there are programs that, and I thought Media Monkey was very good at this, which will go out and look at CDDB and the other databases and try to match it up. And usually will clean up your tags. But there are other programs, and the chat room has a few of them. What we want, though, is something automatic, right? We want something that can.
I bought 5,000 songs that you know, I remember about everywhere.
If you're using iTunes, I've not used this, but the chat room is suggesting a program called TuneUp. It's at tuneupmedia.com, but this is for iTunes. It fixes mislabeled song information, removes duplicate songs, fills in missing album cover art, gets concert alerts, music videos, artist bios, and more. I have not tried it, but
I was on iTunes when I had an iPod Touch, but now I'm on Android, so
right.
I don't know what I'm doing now.
Right. This apparently, according to one of our chatters, listens to the audio like Shazam does. So that's a lot better than just looking at the file size or checking the tags. That would be a great thing to do, a Shazam-like signature system. Yeah, no kidding. I mentioned last week when we talked about Media Monkey, Music Brains, that's with a Z, and their program Music Brains Picard, like Jean-Luc Picard of the Starship Enterprise. That is also supposedly a program that can go through and fix stuff. It's free anyway. It's worth a try. Windows or Mac.
Perfect.
Yeah. So there's a couple. And, you know, you still could, if you really wanted to, just download iTunes. It's free. And load your library into iTunes and then run TuneUp on it.
Okay, well, I already have iTunes, so it has to work with iTunes.
Oh, then this will. This is the one to try. TuneUpMedia.com. It does work with iTunes. Okay. And, you know, the nice thing about iTunes, if you tell iTunes to organize your music library, it does actually do something very handy, which is it puts your music library into folders, into a folder structure that's quite useful. You know, it says music, and then by all the artists, and then within each artist, all the album names, and within each album, the tracks. And that's not a bad way to organize that stuff. And iTunes will kind of do the best it can with that. You could, and Web5629 is saying this, you could highlight all the songs that have anything like AC/DC in it, and then use a mass change. But I understand it's more than just that. That's an example of the problem you're having. I'm going to have to try this. I have not tried this. TuneUp. And let me just see how much it is. It looks like you download it for free, and then there's a lifetime subscription of $50 per computer or an annual subscription of $39.95. I think they're smart. And then there's three different products that make it up. There's the cleaner, the cover art, and the deduper. You know what? I'm going to buy this, and I'll let you know. I'll give it a try. Because this actually, I could use this too. It's a little late for me. I've uploaded everything to iTunes Match and to Amazon and to Google. So my library is kind of now propagated everywhere. In a related story, Patterson in our chat room is sending me this article from Rolling Stone magazine. A computer virus might be blasting AC/DC music in an Iranian nuclear facility. Now that's how you get those nuclear scientists. This is from late last month. A computer virus might be the cause of AC/DC involuntarily blasting at maximum volume at a nuclear facility in Iran. According to F-Secure, which is a very well-known Finnish security firm, the Iranian nuclear refinement facility has endured cyber attacks that include hearing the song Thunderstruck randomly blasting in the middle of the night beyond scientists' control. Definitely designed by American spies, I can promise you that. Or maybe Australians. You know, the original attack on the nuclear refinement facilities was, we now know, from the a joint venture of the Israeli and the United States security forces. So if they're blasting AC/DC, I would guess they're at it again. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, for those about to rock, we salute you. Tom in Newport Beach, California, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, good afternoon. Quick question for you. I have a HP EliteBook 6930 mm-hmm. that I still kind of use once in a while at a second home rather than an iPad. Mm-hmm. I had to replace the battery about a year ago. Got a, quote, non-HP battery. Put it in, worked fine. After a little bit, if computer would be off sitting there, you would get that little light flashing down on the lower left-hand corner of the laptop.
Yeah.
The battery or the laptop then would not start off the battery.
All right.
Sent it into HP under warranty, said, what's the problem? And they said, quote, it's because you used a non-OEM
Of course battery. They said that. They said, what is this in here?
Right. So my question is, two, number one, is that correct? Are they just washing their hands of it? Is it or is it a laptop problem?
Well, I don't think the battery could damage the laptop.
It could.
I do not think it could. I mean, I guess it could, but I don't. Unless it's some really cheesy battery,
right.
It seems unlikely that it could damage the laptop. We've talked before about you do have to be a little bit careful about buying third-party lithium-ion batteries, but only for, in my opinion, for one reason. A couple. One is they could be junk, but the other is because the overcharging circuitry that's in good quality batteries might be missing or misapplied, in which case the battery could burst into flame. But I don't think it could damage the laptop. You're saying that even if you put a regular battery in, an HP battery in, it still has that problem?
I don't know, because the first battery, when it started doing this, the battery was about 2.5 years old. It would not hold a charge, so it needed to be replaced.
Right.
So is your
I mean, HP is probably, I bet you, if you look at the warranty... Well, you're not looking for warranty repairs, though, right?
Well, no, it's still under warranty. And so my question is should I just buy an HP battery, put
yeah,
it in there?
Yeah, send it back. Yeah.
Okay.
I would think so. Yeah, you can, you know, third party. The problem is I understand why these HP batteries are much more expensive. The branded batteries are very, and for all manufacturers, tend to be, you know, $90, $100, $120. And, of course, you want to get the cheaper battery. I think if you send a laptop back to HP with a third-party battery in there, they're going to do exactly what they did, which is, hey, sorry, dude. This isn't our battery. We can't be held responsible. If you decide to use a non-HP part in here, all bets are off. And I bet you it says that in the warranty somewhere. I would guess that the battery did not damage the laptop. There is a logic. I don't know if, but I think there's probably a logic board in the computer that interfaces with that battery. Next time, you don't need to buy a new battery. When you ship it to HP, put the old battery back in. They'll probably replace the battery as well. Do not, in general, I do not recommend putting cheapo third-party batteries and stuff. And it's possible that you did somehow damage it. I'm not an expert on that. And, of course, they've got you on record now. You're one of them guys who uses fake batteries, or you're in trouble now. Carlos, New York, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Carlos.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Okay, first of all, all this patent, all these court cases, all this bull poopy drives me insane.
You're talking about Apple, Samsung.
Huh?
You're talking about Apple versus Samsung.
I'm talking about Apple versus everybody.
Well, now, let's, I'd love to hear your point of view. Let me just set it up, though. Apple is a publicly held company. They invest a lot of money in research and development. They spent a lot of money to develop the iPhone as an innovative product. And you would agree, I'm sure, that when it came out in 2007, it was head and shoulders above the next best product out there, including every single product from Samsung. Samsung, and this was entered into the evidence at the trial, Samsung executives, on seeing the Apple iPhone, said, oh, we have a crisis of design. That was the terms they used. We are in trouble. This phone is really good. Back to the drawing board. And then, oddly enough, shortly afterwards, came out with a phone, the Samsung S, that looked just like an iPhone. So Apple, now, I agree with you, by the way, in some respects, that we'd like to see companies innovate, not litigate. But Apple has the right, according to patent law, to protect themselves, to go to court and say, look, they copied. And the jury agreed and awarded them $1 billion in damages. The judge could triple that. I agree. I would prefer it would be a great world where companies really innovated and tried to do the best and tried to beat each other in the marketplace. But don't you think that sometimes companies deserve to protect their inventions? Carlos, are you there? Oh, there he is. Hold on a second. I pushed the button. Go ahead, Carlos.
Why they don't punch him in the mouth?
Punch him in the mouth. Well, I don't think that's going to happen. I'm sure that there are people who would like to do that. I've seen a lot of people write, I am never going to buy another product from Apple. But really, let's be fair to Apple. And I don't represent and I don't care to represent either Apple or Samsung in this matter. I don't think, I care. I represent the consumer. We're users. So what's best for users? What's best for users is that companies compete with each other in the marketplace to make the best products, and the best products win. But we also have to recognize that if a company can't protect its inventions, at least for a little while, they may be less likely to invent. If this did happen, but if there were wholesale copying of the iPhone the minute it came out, Apple would never be able to recoup its investment in the iPhone, right? What if every company came out, just said, oh, let's this happens sometimes in other areas. Let's just take this apart, this iPhone thing apart, and make an exact copy, part for part, exact copy. Would you agree that was wrong? It might be better for consumers in that we'd have lower prices because those copies would be cheaper. But Apple wouldn't have done the invention in the first place, would they? You have to protect a company so that they can recoup their investment in innovation too. That's why it's difficult. As a consumer, I use the phone I use is the Galaxy S3 from Samsung. I love it, and I think it beats any iPhone ever made. It is better, and Samsung is clearly innovating now. But I think just as clearly, they made the decision to copy Apple early on. And as I read the article from Farhad Manju and Pando Daily earlier in the show, as Manju says, that was the right decision. It kept Samsung competitive, kept them in the marketplace. And so what if they have to pay a $3 billion fine? They've made $21 billion on their smartphones. That's the price of doing business. We do a little copying. We do a little innovation. So let's just take as an example, Apple. We're out of time. I'll come back and talk about one of the Apple patents and ask you what you think. Does Apple have the right to protect that? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. We're talking about Apple, Samsung, and of course people are going to get upset on both sides. You know, if you're an Apple fan, you're going to say, yeah, see, I told you. And if you're a Samsung fan or an Android fan, you're going to go, what the, why, that dirty lawyers, that jury, what do they know? And, it's more complicated than that. I'll give you here, you be the jury here. Apple testified that they had spent a lot of energy thinking about a feature that I've always thought was really great in the iPhone, and the iPhone was absolutely the first to do it. If you're in the browser on an iPhone and you're looking at a web page, it renders the web page tiny at first, so you can see the whole page. But if there's a paragraph you want to read, you double tap it, and in a very magical way, the iPhone zooms in, the browser zooms in to that paragraph, fitting it perfectly to the screen so that you can read it. That was one of the things that Apple has patented. They have a patent for it. It's Tap to Zoom. And it was one of the things they went after Samsung. The jury did rule that Samsung copied that because, yes, in fact, Android phones do that. Not as well, by the way. It's kind of ugly. They don't quite. It's like not as magical. They kind of do it. Then sometimes the letter's off on the edge. You can't read it. Apple does it beautifully. And Apple spent some time in their testimony saying, look, we really thought about this. We put a lot of energy into it, and we patented it. And according to patent law in the U.S., now I think you could argue that you shouldn't be able to patent a software innovation like that for 17 years because 17 years is too long. But the law says you can, and so they patented it. They said, we own that. Nobody can copy that without licensing it. And when Samsung, they did apparently say to Samsung, for $30, you get the whole kit and caboodle. You can just, you get all the patents, you license them all. $30 a phone. And Samsung said no. Now your BlackBerry does that zoom? I don't think so. Not because first of all, it wasn't a touch screen. So you can say your BlackBerry did that, but it didn't. The touch screen BlackBerries came after the iPhone. You can say it shouldn't be patentable. I can, I think that's a reasonable point of view, but it is. Does Apple have the right to protect themselves? They invented it. They spent a lot of energy thinking about it. They may have spent a lot of money on that. Do they have the right to protect themselves? The law says yes. The jury said yes. I think that we have to, acknowledge that that's how it works. Remember the case, the very famous case? They made a movie out of it. The guy who invented intermittent windshield wipers and got copied. Detroit copied him without paying him. And he sued, and it took years, and it probably cut years off his life, but he won. And that's the way it works. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's kind of interesting because it's pretty clear Samsung copied and probably did so knowingly and expected at some point to have to pay a fine and said, well, it's worth it. It's worth it. It's how we're going to stay competitive. And we'll innovate once we catch up with the iPhone, and they have. They've done stuff on Samsung phones that is unique to Samsung. But in order to stay in business, we're going to copy them. And if we have to pay a fine, so be it. Not necessarily a bad business decision. It may very well be what Samsung did. 8888-ASK-LEO. So, Carlos, I understand you're upset. Punching them in the nose, though, I don't think is really the answer. If you really care, I think probably what you should talk about, what we should think about, is patent reform. It is the law now, but you may want to change that. You may want to say, look, you shouldn't be able to patent software. If that's your attitude, I think that's a reasonable attitude. You can make that case. And by the way, we are not at the end of these cases, and that's sad, because it does suck a lot of energy and innovation and money out of the ecosystem. Our next call of the day, Jerry in San Diego. Hi, Jerry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo.
Hey, Jerry, can you pick up the phone? You're a little distant, or maybe your phone's...
It's the answer.
You're very faint.
What we should think about is patent.
Oh, no, that's me.
No, that's...
That's me.
That's him.
Jerry, are you there? Yeah, see, he's listening to the radio. So in 40 seconds, Jerry's going to say, yeah, Leo, I've got a question. Oh, I'm sorry. Sometimes people are on hold for as long as an hour, and so I'm not surprised that sometimes they're just, they put the phone down. Got to go to the bathroom or something, right? Eric in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hey, Eric.
Hey.
Hey, I had a question for you. I'm trying to create jobs and hire people in other states. I actually called you on New Year's Day. I created an Android app that helps people diagnose treadmills and sold one copy since New Year's.
One copy? Oh, I'm sorry. What's the name of it?
Well, the one that people can still find on the market is Treadmill Tricorder. It helps people diagnose treadmills and fix them. And so instead, I'm going to use that now to train technicians in other states and be treadmill repairmen.
Ah, good idea.
And the problem that I'm having is trying to advertise on Craigslist. Just because I'm in California, they won't let me talk to people in other states and help them, you know, just because they're over some imaginary line. Some certain.
Isn't that weird? Craigslist is so strange.
Yeah.
Nothing you can do about it. That's their terms of service.
Yeah.
Craigslist, I tell you, there was a good article by Nick Bilton in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago about Craigslist, and just wondering, when is somebody just going to knock these guys off their perch? Because they do all sorts of weird things like that. They've now shut down. There was a really cool app called PadMapper that would take Craigslist rental listings and put the listings on a map so that if you wanted to, you know, you're in San Francisco, let's say, and you're looking for an apartment, you'd run PadMapper, and it would show you the neighborhoods that there were these listings in. Something Craigslist could easily have done, but didn't do. Craigslist shut it down. They said, even though that every link on that map linked right back to Craigslist, it didn't in any way disenfranchise Craigslist, and it didn't even use their server. It was using a third-party service that used search results from Craigslist, and Craigslist shut that down. So Craigslist is kind of, you know, in an unusual situation where they are not innovating. They haven't changed their page in, you know, years. And they're preventing others from using their data to innovate as well. Now, that's their right. A good friend of mine's son wrote a program that would collate Craigslist, listings. It's like a online classifieds across state lines. Because, you know, you want to find out, and Craigslist shut them down. They just say, no, you can't do that. They don't want to do it, whatever. I don't know why. Maybe it's their right to do so, though, right? And that's just the way it is. And the real question is not, how do we stop them? You can't. The real question is, when is somebody going to come along and do it right, do a better job, and just put them out of business? Because that's what should be happening. I don't understand why it's not, to be honest. One of the things Nick Bilton said in his New York Times article is Craigslist, by, you know, the peace sign icon and everything, has made everybody think, oh, these guys are the good guys. And, they're nice. Craig's such a sweetie. Craig Newmark, he is. He's a sweetie. And so everybody just likes them. They've been around a long time. They just like them. So nobody's putting them out of business. But you know what? It's possible to do a better job. And I look forward to somebody doing it, Eric. Until then, if Craigslist won't let you do it, you can't do it. It's their data. I have a feeling we'll see some competition very soon. Bill in Toronto, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Leo. How you doing? I'm a big fan, buddy.
Thank you. Appreciate your listening all the way up in Canada.
Pardon?
Thanks for listening.
Oh, no problem. Okay, my problem is I just recently downloaded Mountain Lion, and now I can't find AirPlay anywhere on the...
All right, hang on. I'll help you when we come back. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Website, techguylabs.com. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, Samsung versus Apple, digital photography, anything on your mind. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Before the break, we picked up the line with Bill in Toronto, Canada. Now we've kept him on hold through the break. Bill, you say you just installed Mountain Lion on your Macintosh, the new operating system, and you say you can't access AirPlay.
Yes.
Now, normally in Mountain Lion, what you would have is at the top of the screen, you'd have a menu bar with an AirPlay icon in it. It looks like a rectangle, like a television monitor with an arrow pointing up into it.
Yeah, I know what it looks like. It's not there.
It's not there, huh?
Nope. It was on before I had Mountain Lion.
Now, it has to be there. It will only be there if there is an AirPlay device you can play to. Do you have an Apple TV or something there?
TV. I got an iPad, an iPhone, nothing.
Don't know. I don't know. How old is the iMac?
I think it's 2011.
It's only a year old. Some of the older hardware apparently will not do it.
Maybe it might be a year older then.
Maybe it's a little bit older. You have to have an i5 or an i7 for it to work. Do you have an i5 or an i7 in there?
An i5.
It is an i5. That's the Intel processor inside. Requirements for AirPlay mirroring and OS X Mountain Lion. You need an Apple TV, second or third generation, with software update 5.0 or later. You need an iMac mid-2011 or later. So if it is pre-June 2011, and that's because you have to have hardware video encoding capability. You also, of course, have to have a Wi-Fi network that both systems are connected to, the same Wi-Fi network, right?
Connected. Both are connected.
Yeah, yeah.
The same one.
You know, I would say that, who knows? I mean, did you do, you know, one thing you might try is booting to the...
I'm going to try reinstall it all
yeah.
over.
Yeah. Did you install as an upgrade or did you do a clean install?
No, just an upgrade.
Yeah. This is one of the things, and you do have an Apple TV, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And a recent Apple TV. And the Apple TV is plugged in and all that. Okay.
Everything's plugged in. I can't find it.
Maybe take a look at the Apple TV. Make sure AirPlay is enabled there.
Stream YouTube directly to AirPlay, right?
Say again?
It would work before I had Mountain Lion.
It worked from an iPad.
No, it was working from my iMac, too.
You had AirPlay before Mountain Lion?
Yep. Well, when I would watch it, well, only sound would come out, no picture.
Hmm. I've read you the what Apple says you have to have. If you have all of that and it doesn't work, I don't know what to say. You got to play with it some more. Make sure you've got this updated software on your Apple TV, I would say. I don't know how it worked before because the AirPlay is new with Mountain Lion, so I'm a little that's a little odd. Let's see. Now we had Jerry in San Diego, and I'll try again, see if he's there now. Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
Ah, good. Gotcha.
Sorry, I missed my cue.
No, that's okay. I know we keep you on hold a long time.
That's all right. I'm hoping that you can help me.
Uh huh. Sure.
I have a. I want to get another external drive. I have a 2 terabyte Western Digital drive. And the next step up would be to get a 4 terabyte drive so that I could double what I have. In the past, what I've done is always double and drag and drop everything over from one mounted drive onto the new one, and then I just disconnect the old drive. The new Western Digitals are 2 drives in 1 box, 2 drives in 1 enclosure, and I don't know how to access all. How will I access everything that's on my computer if I drag everything over into one drive?
No. It's not showing up as 2 drives, is it?
No, I haven't gotten it yet.
Oh, yeah. No, it'll show up as a single drive. The reason it's 2 drives is because it's the only way they can get 4 terabytes.
It's using, it will show up as 1 drive.
Yeah, it's using RAID. It's using RAID to look like a single drive.
So I'm still confused about how I can...
It'll just look like one big drive.
Okay, so I could still drag and drop.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be just exactly the same as before. Pay no attention to the fact that enclosure has 2 drives in it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So I can rest assured then, because Apple was absolutely no help to me at all.
Well, it's my understanding the way they're doing these dual-drive Western Digitals, that's how they get 4. There's no single drive that's 4 terabytes.
Seagate has one.
Well, I think they're also doing a RAID. So what they do is they put 2 drives together using RAID 0 to make it look like a single drive. And so from the point of view of the operating system, whatever's connected on that USB port will be a single drive. But it isn't. You don't need to know that, though. It's from your point of view, it shouldn't make any difference. It should appear as a single drive. So I guess there are 4 terabyte drives. Wow. I'm not sure I'd recommend a single 4 terabyte drive, to be honest. That seems like an awful lot of data on those platters. That makes me very, very nervous. In fact, I, in general, prefer not to go with the super large drives, but in fact, just it, what a good way to go would be two smaller drives. But in this case, it should just appear as a single drive. It won't make any difference. Won't be a big deal. Yeah, I guess Hitachi has shipped 4 terabyte drives. Wow. That is a lot of drive. No, they did that last year. Well, there you go. Gosh, that's a lot. The density that they'd have to put of data on these platters is just mind-boggling. 6 terabytes a platter. They're going to be able to go up to 6 terabytes a platter. And since you can get 5 platters into a 3.5-inch drive, we're headed towards 30-terabyte drives. Yow. You know, it's really interesting what's happened in the hard drives, because nobody expected that we'd still be using spinning hard drives in 2012. I remember, you know, a decade ago saying, oh, you know, hard drives are going to top out at some point, and we'll go to some other form of storage to get this high data. But these scientists are amazing what they've been able to do. Incredible. From Gilbert in our chat room, an article about mountain lion airplay problems. Error 20403. An error occurred while connecting to the airplay device. I don't think that's this guy's problem, because he wasn't getting an error message. Before you... Well, I'll tell you what. I'll put this in the show notes. I don't think this is related. You know, this is one of the things we want to encourage you all to do, is if you hear something on the air and you say, I know that, or there's a better way, or what about this? You can go to the website now, techguylabs.com. We've got commenting on every question. So after the video comes out, which is usually within a day of the show, we'll post the video. We'll post the question. You'll be able to watch the video. You watch my answer, watch the question. And then, if you'd like, you can comment and add your thoughts, which I think is a great idea. Each question and answer pair has its own commenting section. So that way it's easy to find an answer to a particular question. It's techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. Dwayne in Half Moon Bay is coming up. He wants to make a video call to TMZ. Using Skype. That's more up to TMZ than others. Derek in Oxnard, Carbonite is freezing on his Mac. I'll help you with that, I hope. 8888 Ask Leo is the number, 888-827-5536. If you've got a question, a comment, or suggestion, I'd love to hear from you, especially your opinion on Samsung versus Apple. And as I mentioned, we've got a bunch of big announcements coming up next week and the week after. New Kindles from Amazon, perhaps. A new iPhone from Apple, perhaps. Maybe new iPads, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls coming up. I don't know what TMZ and Skype. What did you? I don't understand that, but we'll talk to them and find out. Ring Central, my babies. This is, let me show you our phone system. This is so cool. You know, when we moved into the brick house, I realized, now we're a business. I have to have a phone system. And I didn't know what to do. I thought, you know, because the only phone systems I've experienced, you know, at Tech TV and stuff, where you have this big PBX box and it's really expensive. And, you know, I was thinking, oh, I don't want to, I can't afford that. But at the same time, I couldn't really do what we had been doing, which is have our employees use their cell phones. Fortunately, we have the world's greatest IT guy. You've probably seen him on the various shows, Russell Tammany from Exponentia. And he said, well, you know what we have been installing with the clients lately, and we like it a lot. It's called Ring Central. And I said, let me check into it. And I was very impressed. So there was no startup cost. It's basically a cloud-based business phone system. No PBX. It all goes through their servers. Very customizable. You get RingCentral apps for just about everything, including my iPhone, my Android phone. Now, the app is cool because I can make calls from my iPhone that appear to be coming from our business phone system. You know, the return number is our business number. You can completely create a complete phone tree. If you call our 800 number, which is a Ring Central number, you know, you get a whole long, it's long because we have a lot of people, but message tree, there's a directory built in, all of this. And it's less than $20 per person per month. And right now, you can do a 30-day risk-free trial and get a second phone when you buy one phone free, up to 20 phones. Ring Central is amazing. No startup costs, no PBX hardware, complete customization. You can have faxes in your inbox. You get voicemail messages in your inbox. All this stuff. It really is a great way to run a business. Highly recommended. Here's what you do. Go to ringcentral.com and sign up for a 30-day risk-free trial with the promo code TWIT. Or, see this says free trial? Or call 800. We have a number, special number for the radio show. 800-543-9980. 800-543-9980, or visit ringcentral.com. Sign up, see that orange button for your free trial. Use the offer code TWIT, and you can do it. Okay? Ringcentral.com, really great system. Thank you, Russell, for telling us to. We put Polycom phones in there. And we have the conference phone in the conference room and all that. And it just works great. It's indistinguishable from any other, you know, landline system, but it's much less expensive. RingCentral.com, offer code TWIT. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. The website techguylabs.com, our brand new site. You can go there and comment, read everything we've been talking about. This is episode 904. Make it easy for you to go there quickly. 904. Dwayne is in Half Moon Bay. You're calling TMZ, huh, Dwayne?
Yeah.
Is it like a show? Is it like a call-in show? Is it a radio show?
What they've started, TMZ has started a thing which I think is kind of cool. On the internet, you can go in and ask questions. It's like a talk show, you know, where they show everything that's going to show on their television show later in the day.
I've seen the show, right? This is the one where the guy, they're in cubicles and kind of has a cup of coffee, stands in the cubicle, and they say, hey, what's the latest with Brad Pitt, that kind of thing?
Yeah, right. I'm addicted to the program.
I have to admit, I haven't seen it very often, but every time I see it, it's strangely compelling. And I'm not into celebrity gossip, but I just love the way it's done. So you can call in the show.
You can call in the show, but now they started doing, you can call in the show not only by phone, but by video on Skype.
Uh-huh.
So I have a little program that I wanted to demonstrate to them called CamTwist.
Oh, I love CamTwist, yeah.
I love CamTwist, and it works with Skype, and I think it's kind of cool, and I think it would be kind of something they'd be interested in. But when I call to make a video call there using Skype, they don't see me they for some reason, and I can't talk to their tech guys.
Yeah, I doubt there are really any tech guys in there. So when you call other people, can they see you?
Yes. Yeah.
So it's them.
It's them, yeah, some way. And I don't know if it has anything to do with CamTwist.
Well, either people can see you or they can't. It's not, sounds like there's something wrong on their end.
Yeah, and I'm using a Mac. Most of the people that call in are PC people.
That shouldn't make any difference. You know, we use Skype more than anybody in the world on my podcast network because many of our hosts are, you know, not in the area. They join the show via Skype from everywhere, from France, from Asia, from England, and from the U.S. And we have a lot of experience with Skype, and this does not ring a bell. I mean, as long as you're able to start video, they should be able to see it. Maybe they're not. Now, are you using the most recent version of Skype?
Yes, the most recent version that'll work on my Mac Mini.
And maybe they're not. That could be one problem. I mean, you need their tech guys, not me, because I don't know why they wouldn't be able to see you.
Yeah.
If you can call other people, if you could call me, Dwayne, and I see you and you see me and you're able to start video and so forth, then it should work with TMZ. Unless, you know, and this, here's what could go wrong. There's lots that can go wrong. They could have the you know, older version of Skype that's incompatible. That does sometimes happen. Skype's updating all the time. They could be doing something wrong. You know, maybe they don't have any tech guys. Sometimes, no, I admit that you know, you can have trouble sending video. We have that happen all the time. But assuming that your video, you're not when you call other people and you're using CamTwist and doing all the same stuff, it's got to be them. CamTwist is cool. It's a Mac app. There are apps like this on the PC, too, that intercept the video. You might try calling them without CamTwist just to see. But it intercepts the video that's coming from the camera and modifies it. So you can do all sorts of special effects. And CamTwist uses the quartz presentation layer that's part of OS X to really give you some cool effects, kind of like photo booth-like effects. In fact, they actually are the same effects. 8888-ASK, Leo. That's the best I can do, Dwayne. Sorry. Derek, Oxnard, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, sir. Big fan.
Thank you.
You.
Thanks.
So I was on hold. I was trying to recreate the problem, and I'm not having such luck at the moment, but I have Carbonite for Mac, and what I've been experiencing is every time I bring back the Mac from a sleep mode, or I believe even sometimes when I restart it, the Carbonite daemon or the Carbonite status in the menu bar, when I hover the mouse over it, it gives me the little beach ball, and it, you know, I open up the activity monitor and shows a high CPU usage and the Carbonite status or the daemon. And so I'm trying to figure out, it's like freezing, and then so I have to use the activity monitor to force quit, and then it kind of restarts itself.
One thing you definitely want to do, and maybe this is it, is make sure that you're not sleeping the hard drive when you're sleeping the computer. So there's a checkbox in the Energy Saver system preference panes that says something like, put the hard drive to sleep.
Okay. Don't, it is a solid state. I believe I have turned that off.
Yeah. Already. Make sure that's turned off, because that will confuse the heck out of Carbonite. I'm not sure. Tell you what, though. I have pretty good access to Carbonite, as you might imagine. They're a sponsor. If you want to send me an email, leo@techguylabs.com, I'll hook you up with some higher-level support at Carbonite. They've got, you know, one of the things they did, which I really admire them for, and like a lot of companies, they moved their tech support offshore trying to save money. And it just wasn't doing a good job. So they've moved it back. I think they're in New Hampshire now or Vermont. They're in New England. And the tech support has gotten much better. Have you tried calling them?
I did email their tech support a while back. This was about 3 months ago when I first noticed it. And they said, to be honest, I can't remember what they said.
Yeah.
I just reinstalled it. I removed it, and then I reinstalled it.
That's a good thing to try. Yeah, and I wonder if it has to do with solid state. I'm not sure. I don't use it on any solid state systems yet.
Okay.
It could be. I don't know. You know what? Send me an email, and I will make sure you get to the top-level support. They'll help you. I think it's – I would check your settings and turn off that hard disk sleep mode. I know that could be a problem. In fact, Pippi Dan in our chat room – or Pippi Den – said, I had that issue, turned off the hard drive sleep mode, and never had the problem again. So I would try that, Derek. That confuses Carbonite, apparently. Brian in North Hollywood, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brian.
Oh, hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you, sir. Long-time listener, very first time speaking to you.
Well, I'm so glad you finally got around to calling.
Yeah. Hey, here's my issue. I've got an old computer that I had acquired, and it's got Windows 2000 on it.
Oh, I love Windows 2000.
Yeah. It's it works good. I'm able to surf the internet and things like this. I don't do a lot with it. But I know that Microsoft does not update anymore, and I was using Firefox as a browser, and what wound up happening is recently, I got a message from Firefox on the screen saying it no longer supports Windows 2000.
Well, it is pretty old. It's 12 years old now, right?
Yeah.
12 years in computer years is like 100. You know, I don't, Microsoft has end of life'd that product, so you're not going to get any more updates. Sorry to say. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I saw that Throwboy came in our chat room. We have a great chat room, by the way. If you go to techguylabs.com, you get a link to that. Fun chat room. People kind of, you know, participating like the kids in the back of the class. One of the people in the chat room right now is a guy named Throwboy who made his name making throw pillows with logos like Twitter and Facebook. And he has LOL and, you know, stuff like that, little cute little pillows. And he just sent me one of his new products. It's from Throwboy Pillows. It's the iCEO doll. And it looks just like, it's so cute. It looks like a stuffed Steve Jobs. Very cute. I don't know. He said, I think they're sold out. But it is really, it's adorable. It's cuddly and plush. So thank you, Throwboy, for that. I don't know. There's other people who have made Steve Jobs action figures who have received cease and desist letters. But this doesn't say Steve's name on it. And it's a plush figure, so it doesn't really look that much like Steve. So you can see it at throwboy.com. Does he have a Bill Gates one? I don't think so. Not as cuddly. We were talking before the break with Brian in North Hollywood, who has a Windows 2000 machine, and he's trying to figure out, well, what should I do with it? At this point, you're probably all right to continue to using it. The Windows 2000 was really the last great version of Windows. I don't know. I think you could argue Windows 7 is as good. That's my current favorite version of Windows, Windows 7. But Windows 2000, up till about then, was just fantastic. Rock solid. No frills, just got its job done. The problem is that, as always happens, with every version of Windows, after a while, Microsoft's just going to say, you got to move on. We can't support every version ever made. They call it end of life. And unless you have a special support contract, they're not going to give you any more updates. But the good news is, just as Microsoft's no longer supporting it, the bad guys aren't either. Nobody's writing viruses for Windows 2000 machines that I know of. So I think you're all right. I don't think it's dangerous. And it will continue to operate fine as long as you don't try to use software from 2012. If you continue to use the software of that vintage, Firefox 3, things like that, it should be fine. Now, my personal opinion is that, you know, if you have a computer that's that old, You certainly shouldn't try to put Windows 7 on it. It just won't have enough horsepower. But you might be able to, if you want to get something that's up to date and kept up to date, put a version of Linux on it. Linux, I've mentioned before, is that free operating system. You can get copies of Linux almost anywhere for nothing on the internet. And some of them are designed for older hardware. A good example would be Puppy Linux. In fact, we made a little show on our podcast network on how to take an old computer and put Puppy Linux on it. Then you have an up-to-date operating system. You can run more modern versions of Firefox, including the current version, and it's more secure, too. So if you go to our Twit network, twit.tv/KH for know-how, that's the know-how show, and that was a couple episodes ago, we showed you how to put Puppy Linux on a machine of a similar vintage. And we talk in there about the merits of doing that and what you need to know and things like that. I think it's a good way to keep an older system alive. There are a lot of computer recycling centers that do that. You know, if you bring them your old computers, they'll fix them up, put a rock solid but older version of Linux on there, and then give it to charities and so forth, schools. Know-how number 5. Thank you, Archandra, in our chat room. twit.tv/KH. For know-how, little plug for that show. So that's what I would do, Brian. If you're not comfortable, continue to run Windows 2000. You keep that machine running with an old version of Linux on it. Randy's in Los Angeles. He's our next caller. Hi, Randy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
I have a problem with a Windows 7 machine. Belongs to a friend of mine. She's trying to install a printer. And no matter what I've tried, I get a message, a dialog box comes up that says, Windows is unable to install a printer, access denied. Running as an administrator, I've checked all the permissions. I created a new administrator account to see if that would help. Tried running the printer install wizard from the command line, and I still get the message. And I've searched online, and apparently there's a lot of people have this problem, and Windows support just keeps saying, run it as an administrator. And I don't want to go into the registry to edit the keys that it says can change the permissions.
No, don't do that. That's a bad idea. So it's just a regular Windows 7 driver for that printer?
Yeah. I can't install Windows Update says there are new drivers. When I go to Windows Update, it installs all the updates except the printer's drivers. It says there's an error, cannot download the new drivers. And when I tried to reinstall her old printer back on the machine, I still get, as soon as I go to add printer, I get Windows cannot install printer, access denied.
You know, there is, and I don't know why this would be the case on that machine, but maybe it happened. It is possible to set a group policy. You know, was this machine ever used in a business?
No, it's always been a home machine.
Yeah, and it may be, you know, sometimes bits get flipped by accident, you know, a cosmic ray strikes the drive or whatever, and a one turns to a zero. But it is possible using the group policy editor, this is something an IT person would use, to prevent you from installing a printer on a computer at work. And I'm wondering if by accident that got set. So go to the group policies.
That would be in what, control panel?
Yeah. And look at the group policies. You're going to look at one called point and print restrictions.
Okay.
And there may be a policy in there that says don't allow a printer to be installed if you've got you can use the group policy editor to do this. If you've got it disabled, well, maybe enable, you know, or I guess it's the other way around. If you've disabled printer install, enable printer install. There's an article. We'll put this. There's an article on a blog, thanks to the chat room for passing us along, cjwdev.wordpress.com. But we'll put a link in the show notes where he talks about this access denied fix.
Apparently it's a problem with Windows 7 administrator accounts denying that permission to all.
Yeah, it seems like if you're an administrator, there should be nothing that is not allowed of you.
Right, because I can see the printer. I can scan from the printer. I can, you know, send files from the printer to the computer, but it doesn't recognize the printer as being a printer. So.
There's also the chat room saying, yeah, if you're an administrator, there should be no group policy that blocks you from doing anything.
Okay.
There's also, and thanks again to the chat room for this, on support.microsoft.com, there is a diagnose printer and printing problems automatically fix. We'll put a link in the show notes.
When I try to run the troubleshooter for that,
yeah,
I get access. It tells me the
same thing.
Problem, and then I get an access denied thing. When it says, I get to the end of that, it says everything's fine. We don't see a problem. I click here. I get access denied.
Yeah, interesting.
I'm
starting to think group policy editor might be set to prevent people from changing that. I don't know. That's an unusual thing. But the problem with Windows is so darn complex. You are logged in as an administrator. You might try right-clicking the install icon and selecting Run as Administrator just to make sure.
I've done that.
Yeah. Do you have any security software on there that might be blocking it?
I disabled the security software. I disabled the firewalls because when I installed her Lexmark printer, the firewall wasn't letting it install.
That's right. Firewall will prevent it too, yeah.
I shut off the firewall, still won't allow it. Before I installed the Lexmark, it just wouldn't see the printer. I didn't get this access denied. But in the meantime, she's upgraded from XP to 7, which, you know.
Ah.
7.
Ah. Ah. Yeah, clean install is always a better choice in a case like that. That can really confuse Windows if it's got old versions lying around. I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of the issue. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dedicate that to our friends in Brawley. 5.3 earthquake there earlier. They're all shook up.
I'm all shook up.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you to Kyle Benham, our musical director, for his great musical picks. You'll put a playlist up. I know, Kyle, on your Google Plus account after the show in about a few minutes. KYLEBENHAM. Or just go to our website, techguylabs.com, and we'll put it there, too. Spotify playlist with all the good stuff. Chandler's in Dallas, Texas. Our next caller. Hi, Chandler. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. I had a question about buying a new computer.
Yes, sir.
So I do a lot of video editing, and I need something with, you know, a lot of power to get through it real fast. And but I want something kind of small and like a laptop. And I use a Final Cut Pro for editing.
Oh, so you're on a Mac?
Yes.
Well, here's the good news. They've really upped the ante on the Macs lately. You've been able to get a pretty fast, powerful Mac, i7 Mac, in the laptops. So I think you shouldn't have too much trouble. I myself bought the MacBook Retina, which was pricey. They start at $2,200. But they do have i7s available. In fact, I think for $2,200 you get an i7. Let me just check on this.
Okay.
Then one of the nice things is those SSD drives make a big difference in the speed of Final Cut. That the negative, of course, is the drives are small because SSD drives tend to be very expensive. Yeah, the base model, which is what I have here, is pretty powerful. For $2,200, it's a 2.3 gigahertz i7. That's the top of the line Intel processor. 8 gigs of RAM. You can get it upgraded to 16, but 8 should be enough. And an SSD that I think is 256 gigs, which is a little small, but if you're going to have, what I would suggest is getting an external Thunderbolt drive or a USB 3 drive, because it does have USB 3, and that'll be fast and big. And you can plug that in, put your video assets on there, and then the operating system, the program, and so forth can be on the internal drive. And that's I'll tell you, this is a fast display. And the resolution is good. So it's really great for editing a video. You have a lot of real estate on this screen. 2880 I can't remember what's the other direction. 1600. It's a very high resolution display. And if you and a lot of editors do this, you can have if you're going to be able to sit down at a desk at some point, you can hook up a 27-inch external monitor through the Thunderbolt port, and then have a lot of screen real estate. In my opinion, this latest MacBook, this Retina, in fact, I've seen benchmarks, is the fastest Mac out there, faster than the current crop of Mac Pros. New Mac Pros aren't coming out until 2013, apparently. So if you can spend the money, and I think $2,200 for somebody who does this as a profession is not too bad, I really like the MacBook Pro with a Retina display. I think it's a nice machine, and the base model is pretty good. Chris in Miami, help us. Why is his airplane not working, Chris?
Leo, I've been working on this since line. A lot of people are asking this question.
Really?
It is right in there at apple.com/OSX/spec/. I mean, it's right there. It says they don't support anything prior to 2011. Anything from 11 forward, they support. You have to get AirParrot for $10. I mean, there are people that want Apple to pay for that. But
no, really. Yeah, AirParrot is a third-party program that's free that you can install that will turn. And your experience has been that AirParrot works just fine.
I've had no trouble with it, but, you know, I'm not a fan of third-party. I prefer to have an Apple product, and I have been working on this with Apple Corporate Office in Cupertino since Mountain Lion, so I'm hoping that at some point they're going to trip up and give it to us. But it's just there is no workaround for it right now that
Think it's unreasonable. They're saying the hardware graphics acceleration is insufficient on older machines, and for AirPlay to work, especially if you're going to mirror, you need a lot of to be able to push a lot of bits. So I don't think that that's unreasonable. I think Apple's saying, look, we don't, those earlier Macs just don't have enough hardware. AirPlay is a nice feature, by the way, and it is a great new feature in Mountain Lion, the ability to take what's on your screen on your laptop or desktop and pump it into your HDTV via an Apple TV, and I've used it quite a bit. And I do acknowledge, I'm using it on, I've used it on the MacBook Pro with Retina, which I was just talking about how fast it is. And I thought, well, let's try it. Let's play Diablo 3 on my MacBook Pro and put it up on my 60-inch HDTV. Actually, I put it on the 10-foot screen, HDTV. And it is true that, especially on that game where you're really pushing the hardware, the frame rate goes down. It's not great. It's really probably not playable as a video game. Probably fine for mousing around. Might be fine for a movie, but it's pushing a lot of bits. So I can't really fault Apple for saying, look, the older hardware just doesn't support it. Chris, I appreciate the call. Noah in Irvine, I think you're going to be the last call today. Hi, Noah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. I'm calling from Irvine, and I have a question.
Yes, Noah. Go right ahead.
I have a Windows 7 Toshiba, and I've had it for about a year now, and I have this search engine that magically installed itself onto my computer, and I can't get it off. It's called Babylon Search.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly magic. It's called malware. Yeah, malware. It's not quite a virus, but it's definitely not. It's malware. So if you Google how to remove Babylon Search, it's a toolbar, right?
Yes.
Yeah. If you Google it, you'll see that there are a number of comments about how to remove it. You actually can use an uninstaller on it, apparently, which is means it can't be too malicious.
All right.
And what it's trying to do is it's changing the search results. And when you click on those links, the guy who designed it makes a penny or two. But if you put it on several million computers, you can make a lot of money. So here's the deal, Noah. You got to be careful when you install software. First of all, always get software from a reliable source. Don't be going out and just downloading programs willy-nilly from all sorts of places. And also, really important when you download software, to go through the process carefully, because it's not unusual, and I bet you this is how you got it. When you install a program, for them to have a bunch of checkboxes saying, hey, how'd you like this? How'd you like that? Would you like to like that? And it's sometimes so easy when you're installing software. And Noah, you sound like a smart kid. I bet you do this. You go next, next, next. Yes, okay. I just want to get it on there. Okay, slow down a little bit and read those little boxes, those informational boxes, because they know you're going to do that. They don't want you to pay too much attention, so they make it kind of hard to see. It's probably something that you agreed to install but didn't notice it. I always do custom installs. That's what Trex is saying in the chat room, and I agree. I always do custom installs. If there's a quick install versus a custom install, do the custom install, because it will ask you about what it's installing. The quick install is, quick. It installs everything in there. Hey, Noah, good luck. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And thank you all for listening. We do this show every weekend right here. The website, techguylabs.com. Stop by anytime. And I'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.